will tell you the one thing that I've learned is that fear is an acronym, right? False experiences appearing real. And all of that is based on our belief that we're not good enough.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, creatives, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. We will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Jewel Schroeder. Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, Jewel Schroeder, tuning in today from Boulder, Colorado. Today's guest is joining me from San Diego, California. I have got Dave Oates in the house. Dave, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
Let's do it. Good to see you, Jewels.
Yeah, good to have you on. Super excited to have this gentleman on the show. He has got such a diverse background. I know you've had over 25 years of strategic public relations experience dealing with a wide array of adverse public events. You know, you started as a U.S. Navy public affairs officer, later as a corporate chief marketing officer and nonprofit president. And you've done, you know, such a wide variety of crises spanning military, government, corporate charity, startup environments, a lot of crisis communications experiences. Yeah. And especially those of you navigating, you know, online presence or your brand reputation, you know, you're really the guy to call. And you've got the company crisis PR that you've been able to help and support people with as well. PR security service, the name of the company. So I know there's so much that we can talk about. Also the author of 4, you know, Amazon books, and you've got a LinkedIn learning course as well. So welcome to the show, Dave. Fill in any gaps that I might've left out and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
I don't know who you're talking about, but he sounds like a pretty cool guy. So let's just, I'll try to match his persona.
So crisis communications, talk about an interesting niche that's so important, right? That, you know, many people, especially with the internet world that we're in, have to navigate, and it's important to have that team. And so tell us how you got into this niche, and did you ever imagine you'd find yourself here?
No, the short answer is no. I never imagined myself being in PR. When I got commissioned in the Navy, I was a ship driver, surface warfare officer, it's called, for the first half of a 9-year career. And when you're on smaller ships, I was the anti-submarine warfare officer, and then I was down in the engineering plant for the latter half of a 3-year tour. Junior officers get these additional collateral duties, as they call, and mine became the public affairs officer. And what that meant on the smaller ship is I was the guy that was writing the, you know, little press releases for the base newspaper when we'd have ports of call in other cities around the world or in the United States. I was the one setting up tours. I was the one facilitating news interviews and those kind of things. And I realized I loved it. And then just by happenstance, I found out that the Navy had 200 officers that did that as their full-time profession. And I said, I got to figure out how to get into this gig. And in San Diego, where I was based, you know, and still live at the time, there's a handful of Navy public affairs officers that are stationed in various commands. And I literally just walked up to them off duty hours and weekends, basically annoyed them with asking, how do I get into this line? How does that work? Found out about the transfer package process, which is this exhaustive bureaucratic paperwork drill that you go through. And the third time asking for the transfer was the charm. I got picked up. I got sent to a 2-month defense, basically PR school for about 2 months, where it's all day, 40 hours a week for 8 weeks, getting immersed in that. And then they send you out in the field. And what the military does really well is they give you the baseline knowledge. They take some people under, you know, that'll mentor you, and they throw you out to real world environments. And in the Navy, crisis is just part of the deal. The last couple of years, I always give as an example, when I was the public affairs officer on board an aircraft carrier, you know, we had mishaps on board, we had crashes, we had accidents, some sailors got severely hurt. We've had, you know, different hot war environments and things of that nature, international incidents, as you would expect when you're forward deployed and usually in contested, you know, engagements. Those were great training grounds for me on being in crisis PR. Now, fast forward, I've been in the private sector, as you said, for about 22 years, hung up my own shingle, done a lot of promotional and crisis PR, didn't really think that crisis could be a standalone offering until these little devices that we all carry around in our pocket came around. And what occurred is now not only do people get the chance to promulgate information 24/7 to anybody that they want and build an audience outside of the traditional news circles, that also meant that any company or entity or individual can be disparaged by an angry tweet or, you know, a Yelp review or a medium.com blog or something along that line there. I found, because of my background, I was getting a lot of referrals for that business. So about 4 years ago, I completely retooled my practice. I do nothing but crisis PR. I wish I'd done it 10 years ago. Did crisis periodically throughout my career, but as a standalone service, I do that only And I get to do it for a whole bunch of entities, literally all around the country, and have been asked to do some things around the world. And I'm grateful for those opportunities. Yeah. I love what I do.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, talk about the background. I mean, being in the Navy, I'm sure, as you mentioned, you know, does, you know, keep you on your toes, to say the least, for all that, you know, and all that you don't know. And I think those skills that have, you know, taken to our world, and you're right, those little smartphones that are in our pocket, all it takes is two clicks of a button, you know, in mass scale to mobilize huge campaigns and things like that. And, you know, I know so many of our listeners, right? Obviously, it's an online platform. So many people listen, follow things online. There's just all this new stuff that you have to consider, you know, whether it is reviews or how you land or reputation. And that also can be challenging of finding your authentic voice and your authentic self, and also how to maintain that. And, you know, even myself, like, it's hard to not take things personally sometimes, and you want to show up, you want to do good. And I know a lot of our listeners navigate that. So share a little bit about that perspective that you've encountered.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The world in which we now live, where people can comment at a moment's notice, means that most people usually respond with emotion. There's something that's triggered a response that now they believe they need to text, tweet, talk, post, whatever. And oftentimes it's in angry tones, right? People get more motivated about arguing about something or posting something when they feel disparaged, right or wrong, you know, whether it's truthful or not, that's usually the response. And they feel they can do so in a safe environment, in their home or in their, you know, wherever they're at, in their car, because these little devices also give some degree of anonymity, at least something you wouldn't say to an individual live in person or in situations like this. So that's the world in which we live. So there's two things that I would tell, particularly your audience that is now branching to different things and purveying, you know, getting more, I would say, in touch with their next phase of their life and their authentic self. First off, haters are going to hate. I could put a video of a cute kitten playing with a ball of yarn on YouTube. I'll get 1,000 thumbs up and I'll get 5 down checks. I don't know what those 5 people problems are, but they are out there and that's just how it is. So you do have to develop a thicker skin. But I think the second thing, more important, is you have to be consistent in your own communications. As challenging as these little devices are in allowing anybody to take a pot shot at you, whether it's deserved or not, it does provide individuals and entities an opportunity to promulgate on their own, without a third-party intermediary, you know, their authentic self, what their core values are, what they work towards, what they strive to do, what is it that they makes them tick. If you do it in a way that brings in an audience that's sort of with what I call empathy in action, you will draw people to look upon you favorably. And that does two things. One is it sets the narrative as to how you're defined. So if somebody does take, you know, a disparaging pot shot at you, as I said, you have the opportunity to sort of put that in context right away. The second thing is you do is you're going to develop a following base that will come to your aid if somebody does that. That's all assuming that the accusations or the comments or the criticism is unwarranted. In other words, it's just completely made up. There are times where people goof up, right? We're humans. We all mess up on occasion. It's just a fact of life. These vehicles also give the opportunity for you as an entity, whether it's an individual or on behalf of an organization, to be able to own that right away, create that empathy and action by saying, you know what? We did goof. We're sorry. Here's how we're going to fix it. And 9 times out of 10, everybody's going to give you the benefit of the doubt for that. It's the time in which most people will shy away from that, won't comment, or try to counterpoint, you know, get into some sort of debate or discussion online with the individual, because what they have said, they've taken completely out of context or blown out of proportion. And now you're just nitpicking at them. And all you do in those areas is you just exacerbate the problem. You just accelerate the anxiety and animosity and extend this news cycle and get people who've been following it to wonder whether there's some truth. Yeah. And that's not a skill set that's widely shared, particularly for successful people who spent all their life ignoring their naysayers and barreling through obstacles to get where they're at, right? Those are sort of the fight or flight mode. You know, if you don't comment on the social media post or whatever, because you've been trained to tune out those things, or you do a point, counterpoint, punch back, those natural reactions that you have gotten you to success in certain areas of your life probably won't work really well in the area of crisis communications and social media chatter and that kind of stuff. So that's where I usually help a lot of organizations and entities.
Hello, Unconventional Lifers. This is your host, Jules, with some exciting news to share. We just launched our next Unconventional Life event on a private island in Fiji this November 9th through the 13th.
This 5-day business accelerator is going to be so awesome, full of 75 entrepreneurs, creatives, and thought leaders located on the most gorgeous private coral reef. I was there in June and absolutely fell in love. So if you are ready to head to your next level, you feel like there's something brewing inside of you, or you want an awesome pattern interrupt, make sure to head over to unconventionallifeshow.com/Fiji to get all the details about the event. We are selling tickets like crazy. We just launched this event and made it open. We do these events twice a year. So come connect with this amazing community. Join us on this island in Fiji. Even if you're a little bit curious, head over to that link to see what it's all about, and we'll see you there.
You know, I know there's also this, you know, cancel culture narrative sometimes too, where it's just like, literally, I mean, we saw it and we've heard this, you know, term a little bit, where it's like people have a momentum, they have a following, they have this, and then overnight someone moves up, something happens, and it's just like over. And sometimes that's very much warranted and sometimes it's not warranted. Whether it's an extreme called cancel culture or it's just something else that happens within a company, if someone's listening to this right now and they've navigated that or are navigating that, what would be their first steps? And I know you've kind of alluded to this more in a general sense. And so if they were to really start to try to reshape the narrative, I know it's not a one size fits all, but what are a few proactive things they could start doing?
No, it's a great question. And I would say, regardless of the entity and the size of the organization, there's three things that you must do. The first one is, you don't want to be the last person to know if somebody's making a comment about you, good or bad. And so there are free tools that anyone can use, Google Alerts, TweetDeck, you know, freemium-based pricing, to keep in tune if somebody is making a comment about you. So you're not the last person to know if there's an issue that's brewing that's starting to gain traction so that you can respond. So that's point number one. Point number two is something we already reiterated, but I think it's important to restate, is that you want to maintain a really good internet social media presence. It doesn't mean I want to know about what you ate for dinner or what restaurant you were at, right? If you look at my social media posts, they tend to be around three different things. They tend to be about the work I do. They tend to be also about the causes that are near and dear to my heart, or kudos and shout outs to other people that I find are inspiring. And I pepper in a little bit of family stuff on occasion, or things I'm supposed to do, more because I think they're fun. And also hopefully people get a little more insight into me. I do those things not only because I think they're authentic to me, but I'm also setting the stage in my social media, my internet presence, as to people to know who I am and what I stand for and what I do and what I love to do and what things I find enjoyable. Hopefully people get to know me a little bit more than they would otherwise. And if I do it on a regular regimented basis, now part of my line of work, mind you, I'm not saying people have to do something daily, but I do believe that maintaining a solid internet presence does help when somebody decides that they're going to try to reset the narrative. They are going to be swimming against the tide of all of this content and followers that you have who know who you really are. So that's the second thing. The third thing is, when there is a negative comment, while there will certainly be certain times when you don't need to respond, if it's something out of completely left field, I would say that's probably the exception to the general rule. You need to respond. You need to respond with empathy and action. And by empathy, I don't mean culpability if there's no fault that you have to own. But you do need to diffuse a situation by saying, hey, I appreciate your comment. Here's where the realities are. If you want to talk more, I'm happy to do so. Otherwise, I just wish you all the best. And you do so not to necessarily change the mindset of the person making the accusation or making the disparaging comment. Haters are going to hate, like we said beforehand. Yeah. And I'm not looking to necessarily change their mindset because they're going to dig in. But I am telegraphing to everybody else who sees them, whether it's on Twitter, Instagram, Yelp, or whatever, you may not want to take this at face value. Or again, if I've screwed up, own it, try to fix it. Mm-hmm. People will recognize that, hey, you take this seriously. You're being consistent in your value system, particularly when things go wrong. And you'll find out that in those cases, you may actually endear yourself more. But I would say, regardless of the individual entities, those are the three things you need to do. Monitor your internet presence, maintain a solid one, and respond with empathy and action to comments that are made at least more often than not.
I love that. Such great advice, unconventional lifers, especially the empathy and action. It's such a simple phrase that packs a big punch in my world of it. And that's helpful to consider. And I know, like, you and your background, you know, you've helped 55 different nursing homes during the early stages of the pandemic deal with the outbreak of complaints. You've also represented a major sports team and helped their family, you know, protect reputation when the star player was accused of sexual assault. You've had such a diverse background. And You know, give us an example, and I don't know if confidentiality plays, you don't have to go that specific, but some of our listeners, just to map some of these campaigns and even the complexity of it. Because I think sometimes, you know, when you're in it, the problem feels so big and it's easy to feel so alone. Like there's no possible way I can surmount this thing, or it hasn't been done. And, you know, and then in hindsight, you're like, okay, I survived it or I navigated it. But, you know, I think that weight oftentimes keeps people silent, or keeps them feeling hopeless, or keeps them feeling like it's not possible. Yet you literally the guy that, you know, if everyone calls and is like, hey, when it feels like it can't move, you know, they give you guys a ring. And share a little bit about one of the, you know, instances that it felt like there was a big thing to navigate. And just from the perspective, so our listeners can really understand that it is all workable with the right treatment.
I'm happy to go into the nursing home stories and the professional sports team. But I think those are
probably, or something else. Yeah.
Right. I was going to say, I think those are probably the exception to the rule. Those are so big and catastrophic that they probably don't resonate with a lot of the listeners. But let me give you two examples that happened over the last year. One was a matter just recently, literally within the last month, here in Southern California, a small dance studio, privately owned entity catering to youth dance classes, a wide range, ballet, hip hop, line dancing, those kind of things. And they had a situation, it's run by a remarkable woman who's made this business, you know, from literally nothing to a real successful regional, like in her little neighborhood, a small business by every stretch, but has done a remarkable work. She had had an issue where one of her more popular instructors was arrested by local law enforcement for charges stemming from 15 years ago with her allegations of assault of a minor. At the time of the allegations, the studio wasn't even in business. So she wasn't even an entity. And there were no allegations, even after the arrest, of any impropriety between the instructor and any of the students over any period of time. Nevertheless, you can imagine how that resonated with parents and also the general public. So I get this frantic call, thanks to a friend of a friend who had introduced us, saying, what do I do? I said, there are three things we're going to do. First off, we're going to message your staff. Employees are always the first thing you want to engage, because they're the ones who are going to be talking to the parents. And then the second thing we're going to do is we're going to talk to the parents of your current student body. And we're also going to talk to the parents of previous students, because that was something that you wanted to make sure you were also engaging. And then the third was the media. And most people would do that the opposite, media first and then everybody else second. But I'd say you've got to go from within. And in all those messages, the general premise is the same thing. We're as shocked as you are. Nevertheless, he's on an indefinite leave of absence. We are going to reevaluate all of our process procedures for hiring. And as we do that, we are going to maintain focus on providing an exceptional educational experience, fun experience for your child. And we did that for media as well as the parents. And then we set up systems or made ourselves available to answer any questions from parents, from kids, from staff. And the owner did a remarkable job, you know, as we coached her through that, is she literally at every class for the next week would walk in and talk to parents and just offer herself up. And that was a stressful, trying time. You can imagine she was seeing her business life flash in front of her eyes. The end result was, while there was a lot of news coverage and they had our statement, it was a one news cycle event, so it didn't extend. Out of the 450 students that this company had as paying clients, she'd only lost two, back to normal operations. And so that's what I try to do on a regular basis. The second one was an allegation that was actually had some truth to it, of a CEO of a small manufacturing company by employee who alleged sexual assault. Now, there wasn't sexual assault, but what there was an affair. And it was an affair that his family knew about and the staff had known about, but now it was making, thanks to a blog, sort of the business partners. And the allegations in this article were unfounded and, again, taken out of context. But the kernel of the truth was there was an improper relationship. And at the coach of the CEO, he owned it in public. And that was very uncomfortable for him, as well as his staff, as well as his family. But he said, here's the reality. And I've said this before, and I've apologized as I had years ago to my family, and that business is still going. And that wasn't necessarily clear. Again, very small business, very manufacturing, whether that was going to happen, because all the customers were ready to bolt. That company is still in business and still engaged and slowly getting back to where they were beforehand. But that took a lot of courage, because he had to show empathy in action and had to be a little bit transparent. That's probably the thing that I emphasize more. Empathy in action, and to the degree you can be transparent, you should. And I think that'll bode well, pretty much in life and business, and certainly in crisis communication.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing those examples and those narratives. And you know, I think what strikes me the most is even coaching like the founders and the amount of, like you said, courage and fear that happens as individuals in our humanity. And talk about living the unconventional life. You know, it's the premise of taking what's comfortable and saying, yep, that feeling that says there is more, I'm going to go for that. And I'm going to step into the unknown, and I'm going to take what may feel secure, and I'm going to try something. I'm going to iterate in whatever expression that might look for you. And so to all of our listeners, my last point before we move into the rapid fire round and start to wrap up our segment here is, how do you in your own life face that fear, face that next step, that next evolution? I know you do so many things even beyond just managing, you know, this PR firm, and it allows you to have a lot of cool experiences. And I'm sure in order to be the person that you are, there's a relationship that you have with yourself. And tell us a little about that relationship of how you navigate that fear and that next level, and any perspective you can give to the listeners on it.
Man, I really appreciate the question. And I appreciate it when people look at me like, wow, you're a real success. I will tell you, I appreciate when people say that. I don't consider myself any more successful than anybody else can be. I certainly admiring people who are more successful. I had to learn, though, the idea of having the courage to start my own business. And when the business wasn't going well, which was only about four or five years ago, I had to figure out how to retool this business and move forward. And I will tell you, there are two things that I look back upon in my childhood that I had to address and overcome. And they largely center on the fear of failure and the fear of abandonment, which were core fears that came back from me through experiences where people who loved me, who are around me, were so concerned about my well-being that would be overly protective. If you remember the movie 20 years ago, Finding Nemo, Marlin had to overcome his courage to go find his son. And his son had wanted to branch out, which is what got him into trouble in the first place. So it's a Disney Pixar movie. I get it. And, you know,
it's a great movie though.
The message is pretty solid, right? It's Marlin was telling his son, you know, Nemo, you just can't, right? You've got this fin, you just can't do this. And he realized at the end of the movie, he could. We put our own barriers in front of us because of a fear, failure, or some sort of abandonment that no one will love us. At least that was for me. And once you recognize that, I had to learn it a couple times in school when I was cratering in classes, but I had to learn it. My first year in the Navy was not good. I was not succeeding. And it wasn't until the point that I started to say, you know what? Let's not worry about the outcome. Let's worry about the effort. Let's worry about putting this together. And then had to do it again when I decided to start a business. And then when the business was creating, when I wasn't making money, when I had to lay off staff and I had to retool, I had to relearn that. But in all those areas, I can tell you now I'm in my 53rd year around the sun, soon to be 54 years. I will tell you the one thing that I've learned is that fear is an acronym, right? It's false experiences appearing real. And all of that is based on our belief that we're not good enough. I've had my cuts and my scrapes, and everybody does. But once I figured that out, nothing is impossible. I'm now trying to do that in my life through various relationships and various other areas. And that's my work in progress now, is to try to be the person who's not afraid of what may not be, but be hopeful about what can be and work toward that and find the joy in life. I am maximizing the joy in my life on every opportunity. And I'm trying to get those around me, I shouldn't say get those because it sounds a little condescending. I'm trying to support those around me to find the joy in their life. Because if you love what you do, if you get up in the morning and you look at the possibilities of the day, whatever state of life you're in, everything else takes care of itself. If you're worried that something isn't going to go right, or you're upset that somebody is throwing an obstacle your way or not agreeing with the same thing, and you can't find a joy in working around that and moving forward, life's a slog. Life is really tough. And I know some people in my life who I consider friends, and they are good people, good-hearted, smart, and they're miserable. And I think it's because they live under the premise, whether they know it or not, of fear and scarcity. And I will tell you, in my experiences now, it's abundance and joy. If you come up with that framework and work hard at it, right? You just can't like have that mindset and go make a sandwich. But if you have that mindset, life works out. However it's supposed to work out, you'll have enough to eat, you'll have a roof over your head, and you'll have fun in your life, and you'll have capacity to help others do the same.
So good. Dave, I'm so happy I asked you that question just to hear your perspective on it. And, you know, it's not about the outcome, it's about the effort. And that's something you said, and it's so well said. And that joy navigation, you know, I went through a period in my life the last couple of years, and many of our listeners know, struggled a lot with autoimmune. It got to the point where I was having early onsets of MS, could barely get to the kitchen, super healthy person, individual. I was having reactivated Epstein-Barr, and it just got to the point. It was like, what is the point, right? Like, I hit this profound completion of, there's enough podcast episodes. I'm also a musician. I've done enough albums. I've done enough events. I've done enough things. And what is it going to really take to want to show up again? And that joy, North Star, was what got me through. And if I just deposit a little bit of joy every day about what feels good, and I just hit that same note again and again, slowly over time, you open your eyes and you're like, whoa, okay. Like, this is great. I want to keep going.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'm so glad to see you looking, at least in this little screen that I was looking at there, looking really well. I use another analogy. Baseball is my first love. I was a baseball fan. I've learned that from my dad all my life. It was always about who's in first and how many games behind her, right? That was like the big thing. But I realized baseball is a great analogy for life. So the best hitter in baseball, right? The guy making $35 million a year to hit the ball will fail on average 2 out of every 3 times they step to the plate, right? So there's this batting average and it's 0.35. Well, that's another way of saying 35%. So put it in raw numbers, 1/3 of the time, the person who is considered the best, at least at the time in their profession, only succeeds at their primary job 1 out of every 3 times. Why is that remarkable? What the remarkable point is that after being up there at the plate and striking out or grounding out or flying out, that person by 3 innings later, if not earlier, has the audacity, the temerity, the gumption, the unmitigated gall to get up there and try it again. Are you kidding? How many times do people like try something once, strike out and go, well, this sucks. I can't. And they throw it away and they get all mad and they're pissed off at the world. And this person's like, nope, it's part of the game, right? If I continue to get up there and I continue to take swings and I continue to learn from the experiences, I'll get my hits. And then they're considered a success in their job. I think that's a metaphor to life.
It absolutely is. And such the unconventional life spirit. And I love you sharing that example as well. So good. Unconventional lifers. We're going to jump into the rapid fire round. We got a great giveaway coming up shortly after that. I have a series of lightning questions coming at you, Dave. Are you ready?
Hello, unconventional lifers. This is your host, Jules, with some exciting news to share. We just launched our next unconventional life event on a private island in Fiji this November 9th through the 13th. This 5-day business accelerator is going to be so awesome, full of 75 entrepreneurs, creatives, and thought leaders located on the most gorgeous private coral reef. I was there in June and absolutely fell in love. So if you are ready to head to your next level, you feel like there's something brewing inside of you, or you want an awesome pattern interrupt, make sure to head over to unconventionallifeshow.com/Fiji to get all the details about the event. We are selling tickets like crazy. We just launched this event and made it open. We do these events twice a year. So come connect with this amazing community. Join us on this island in Fiji. Even if you're a little bit curious, head over to that link to see what it's all about, and we'll see you there.
Let's bring it.
All right. Question number one, fill in the blanks, speaking about yourself. If you really knew me, you would know what?
I don't get down for too long.
Love that. Next question. What is one practice that you do regularly that you feel sets you up in a good framework for success?
I sing, actually. This is going to be weird. I'm a really good shower singer and I'm a really good karaoke car singer. But I think having that kind of joy when you get to there and belting out something puts you in the framework for whatever life is going to happen. Because we all get overwhelmed with tasks. I don't get everything else done. But yeah, singing once a day or multiple times a day helps.
Yes, it does.
That was a bad visual. Was it a bad visual for a musician? I'm sorry.
No, it was good. I'm kind of like, hey, you want to sing something right now for us? I mean,
ain't no sunshine when she... Anyway, that's the end of that.
Yeah, that's good. It's real good. I love it, Dave. The unconventional life. So good. Well, my last question for 100%. You, when you think about the unconventional life and what living the unconventional life means to you, what would you say that is in just a couple words?
I think it's how my life turned out. I'm in San Diego. I was supposed to be in San Diego 6 months in my surface warfare training school. My first ship was supposed to be up at Long Beach. They shifted its home port to San Diego. I met my wife. I'm now in PR. And if you had told me as a 20-year-old that I would be in public relations for nearly 30 years, former Navy, and living in San Diego, I'd have said, you are nuts. That is not. I'm from the East Coast originally. That's just not going to happen. And here I am. And I don't mean to say like, oh, look at me, I'm so great. Everybody's got that kind of story. But my mom has a great saying, and that is never live your life by default. And I think that's how, when you think about unconventional life, it's find the joy, find the opportunities, look at the abundance and the potential for that. Keep learning, keep trying. Don't worry about the cuts and the scrapes. They're going to happen. It's the effort that you put in there and the continue learning, and things are going to happen. They're going to happen in ways you never thought about, in ways that are just incredibly fulfilling. And if you look at that in life, it will be a good one for you.
Yes, it will. Well said, Dave Oates, everyone. Dave, I know you got a great giveaway for one of our listeners. Tell us about the giveaway.
People are thinking about, okay, well, look, let me look at my internet presence. Let me see if I'm maintaining that good foundation. Let me see if I'm sort of keeping an eye on things that I'm supposed to. Somebody wants a 30-minute overview. We go through your existing presence. I'll give you some tips and tricks, particularly if they're moving in transition to something else that they want to showcase their authentic self. I'm happy to do so. I look forward to connecting with one of your listeners on that soon.
Thank you so much for that offering, Dave. Unconventional Lifers, you can head over to the website, unconventionallifeshow.com, click on the giveaway tab, enter to win there. As a reminder, a giveaway is always open 1 week after the episode airs. Episodes are always out every Monday, so make sure to tune in live to never miss an episode, never miss a giveaway. And Dave, for those that want to follow more about what you're doing in the world, obviously you've got your company. I know you're on social media. What's the best place for people to follow along and stay in touch?
I would say LinkedIn is probably my most robust platform. So if you just Google Dave Oates Crisis PR, my LinkedIn profile comes up. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. I've got a YouTube channel as well, but LinkedIn is probably the best. So I hope to connect with as many of your listeners on that as I can.
Awesome. And Unconventional Lifers, Oates is O-A-T-E-S, Dave, V-A-V-E. We'll put all those links up at the show notes at unconventionallifeshow.com. Take a look at that and check out Dave and stay in touch. Dave, thank you so much for sharing your heart, sharing your story, sharing your work with us today on the episode. It was so great to have you on and to get to know you.
It's been a blast. Thanks, Jules.
Thanks so much, everyone.